The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Florence Nash from Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour I'll be reading to you from a variety of sources, probably including Money Magazine for August of 2018. Today's programming is generously underwritten by Celebi Chiropractic. Celebi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. Now also, I'm going to read a few traveling pieces since this is traveling season, and I'm going to begin with one. I'm going to continue something we didn't have time to finish last week, and that is AARP's 10 best places to live for under $40,000 a year. This was from the AARP magazine for June and July 2018, and we got as far as McMinnville, Oregon, and now we are going to resume that list with Munhall, Pennsylvania. It has 11,200 residents and 160 sunny days. This borough clawed its way into existence thanks to Andrew Carnegie as part of the growing residential area surrounding his company's Homestead Steelworks. And the Carnegie Library of Homestead is still one of Munhall's greatest assets, with an athletic club and a music hall that hosts a regular schedule of concerts. Residents love what they call downtown's 1950s Americana vibe. But Munhall also boasts the waterfront, a development of apartments, shopping, and restaurants along the Monongahela River. Access to excellent health care is extraordinary, with 381 physicians per 100,000 people, compared with the U.S. average of 210. UPMC Presbyterian Shadyside, just 5 miles away, is rated one of the top 20 hospitals in the country. Median housing price is $81,300. The vibe is American, circa 1950s, the freebies that count, pedal onto the Great Allegheny Passage, the 150-mile path connecting Pittsburgh to Washington, D.C. Best way to spend $10, sample a slice at DeSalis' Pizza Parlor. Urban getaway, Pittsburgh, 7 miles. Next, we have Gulfport, Florida. If brightly painted beach houses, walkability, and watching dolphins, manatees, and seabirds are on your wish list, Gulfport wants to meet you. The small town has spruced up its neglected areas and thrown open its arms to newcomers, including artists, artisans, the gay and lesbian community, and especially retirees. For a little beach town, it's got a big heart. Gulfport Neighbors is a volunteer force of some 500 people who clean the beach twice a month and get a free lunch for their effort, but are also quick to fix a fallen fence or stock the area's little free pantry kiosks with donated food. The Gulfport Get-Go Transportation Service, also operated by volunteers, offers free rides daily from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Median housing price is $191,300. The vibe is Key West vibe at a Costco price. The freebies that count, the Gulfport Get-Go, operated by volunteers, offer free rides daily until 10 p.m. Best way to spend $10, find the nun-clad windows at Stella's and settle in for breakfast and bloodies. Urban getaway, Tampa and St. Petersburg, both 25 miles away. Next, Guthrie, Oklahoma. Most people have never heard of Guthrie, but because it was Oklahoma's state capital from 1907 until 1910, and once an enormous tent city because of the land rush, this small town has plenty of history. And it carefully nurtures that heritage from cowboy culture to its well-restored Victorian architecture. Many buildings were constructed between 1889 and 1910, with a trolley car and regular period reenactments. Guthrie also fosters a busy art scene, including the state's oldest professional theater company, live music venues, and four museums. The Oklahoma International Bluegrass Festival draws 15,000 visitors annually. The trolley transports older adults to shopping and medical appointments, all on a donation basis. The local senior center, which provides affordable lunches and activities such as weekly line dancing classes, is set within a park where walking trails are well lit for early bird and late night exercise. The city is committed to looking at aging in a new way, too. It's gotten lots of attention for placing a public pre-kindergarten class on site at the Willow Creek Nursing Home to support intergenerational education. Median housing price, $129,700. Vibe, postcards from the Wild West. Freebies that count? Watch reenactors stage regular shootouts on South 2nd Street. Best way to spend $10? Grab a latte at Hoboken Coffee Roasters, voted a national beauty by Architectural Digest. Urban getaway? Oklahoma City is 33 miles. Next, Carlville, Iowa. 20,400 residents, 198 sunny days. Bordered on the east and south by the Iowa River, Iowa City, and the massive University of Iowa, Carlville is wooing affluent academics and medical professionals by giving them plenty to do, eat, and buy. There's a new performing arts center, an outdoor aquatic center, and a renovated public library. But the town's showcase is the Iowa River Landing, a 180-acre mixed-use development which includes residential space, shopping, and restaurants that appeal to retirees. From here, simply take the connected skywalk to arrive at a branch of the University of Iowa Hospitals. A larger facility is just 2 miles away. There's also a permanent sculpture walk with each piece from an Iowa artist inspired by works from the nationally renowned Iowa Writers' Workshop. And for a town its size, it's served by unexpectedly big-name brands, including Trader Joe's, Hilton, and Marriott. Plentiful buses, free for older adults, are available throughout the area. Median housing price, $177,300. Vibe, college meets cornfield. Freebies that count, cycling on the Iowa River Corridor Trail, Iowa's busiest. Best way to spend $10, Scratch Bakery's famous cupcakes cost $2, and the menu changes daily. Urban getaway, Iowa City, 3 miles. Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Residents of California and Washington, fed up with coastal housing prices, are streaming into this pretty resort town. An enormous outdoor playground, the town is anchored by Lake Coeur d'Alene, considered one of the most beautiful alpine lakes in the world. Coeur d'Alene itself is small and quaint, yet there's a Costco. And in between the almost dizzying options of outdoor pursuits that make the town so popular, and numerous festivals meant to amuse the tourists, a solid year-round community hums along, with varied civic organizations and plenty of ways to volunteer. These include opportunities at the well-regarded Kootenai Health Coeur d'Alene facility and the Lake City Center, which provides hot lunches for older adults for $4, plus numerous social events. Median housing price, $247,700. Vibe, vast outdoor playground. Freebies that count, walk the world's longest floating boardwalk. Best way to spend $10, ride on the city's recently resurrected 1940s-era carousel. Urban getaway, Spokane, Washington, 33 miles. So on this subject of small towns and travel, I want to read you a foreword from the 2006 edition of The Best American Travel Writing. This is a series that's put out annually by Houghton Mifflin Company. The series editor is Jason Wilson, and he wrote the foreword to the annual collection of travel writing for 2006, which I think is sort of much to the point and enjoyable to hear. The slippery notion of authenticity, the authentic travel experience, is something that people in the travel writing business endlessly wring their hands over. Just pick up any travel magazine and you'll find boasts of authenticity on the cover. Insiders Istanbul, In Search of the Real Umbria, The True Taste of Thailand. The message seems clear. If you're not traveling to see our hidden gems or dining on our local secrets, well, you're hopeless. Worse than hopeless, you're a tourist. Travel Weekly, the national newspaper for the travel industry, hosted a roundtable discussion in early 2006 and invited top editors from seven of the nation's leading travel publications. They gathered in the Ed Sullivan Room at the Friars Club in New York and discussed a variety of pressing issues, such as, what are the ingredients that create buzz for a destination? The issue of authentic travel experience was quickly raised. The editor-in-chief of one of the nation's largest travel magazines explained, that new adventure traveler is the person who wants to fly to India first class or business class. They want to stay in a great hotel. Then they want to be taken to a small village where they meet the rug dealer. Then they want to buy the rug. But the thing is, they want the genuine, authentic experience, and they're willing to pay to get there. That doesn't sound authentic at all, to have someone take you to a rug dealer, said the editor of a more budget-conscious magazine. I don't agree, the first editor persisted. You can go there and find someone who can take you into the mountains. I have a story in the works on just this thing. They will take you to the guy who will sell you the rug, and it is real. And when they return, it is what they're going to talk about when people come over for dinner. This assertion was pushed into the realm of the absurd by the editor-in-chief of another big travel magazine, who said, the adventure traveler is not necessarily the one out there climbing rocks. There's also the adventurous traveler who's Donna Karan's friend searching for a new experience. A new nirvana, someone else hopefully suggested. A new nirvana, or a new thing to buy. I live in a 300-year-old town called Haddonfield, New Jersey. In the 1850s, Haddonfield served as a vacation spot for well-heeled Philadelphians who made the short trip across the Delaware River to escape the city's stifling summer. Taste changed. Perhaps the travel editors of the era started sending people to hipper, cooler destinations. Anyway, Haddonfield's days as a vacation destination are long gone, and now the town resembles many other colonial-era hamlets throughout the northeastern United States. A certain type of travel writer might call Haddonfield charming or quaint. It's the kind of place with a main street where, besides law offices, banks, and churches, you'll find stuff like quilting shops, a hospital for dolls, and a bakery for dogs. It's the kind of place where houses have name tags. Charles French, 1758, Methodist Parsonage, 1857, Birdwood Tenant House, 1783. There's a Quaker school, a chocolate shop, a grandfather clock repairman, a sports memorabilia dealer, three ice cream parlors, a violin maker, a harp store, and a cobbler. The dress shop posts snapshots in the window of local girls wearing their gowns at prom. A photography studio displays portraits of people's pets. There's a novelty shop called Jamaican Me Crazy, a jeweler called The Family Jewels, and a toy store called The Happy Hippo. There's a barbershop that claims to be the oldest in New Jersey. One of the town's two skateboard shops recently advertised an all-girl skateboard camp. On summer evenings, you can gather around the gazebo and listen to the town's official brass band perform. Of course, just like every other small American town, we have a volunteer fire station and a 4th of July parade and a Starbucks. We boast one small bed and breakfast. We don't really have any tourist attractions to speak of, though on special days the docents in period costume will happily guide you through our historic Indian King Tavern, an important meeting place during the Revolutionary War. Our major claim to fame, relatively speaking, is that the world's first complete dinosaur skeleton was discovered here in 1858. A National Historic Site plaque marks the spot. Our dinosaur is actually named the Hadrosaurus, and we've erected a huge bronze sculpture of him in the middle of downtown. He now goes by the name Hattie. We have several cafes and restaurants, though you'll have to bring your own bottle of wine to dinner. That's because Haddonfield is a dry town, meaning the sale of alcoholic beverages is strictly prohibited. There are no pubs or liquor stores to be found within the town's borders. Even the Indian King Tavern isn't allowed to serve drinks anymore. What I hope to convey here is that although Haddonfield is a lovely place to live and to raise children, it is, well, to use another travel writing euphemism, it can be sleepy. Suffice to say that no American travel editor will be commissioning a travel feature about Haddonfield anytime soon. In fact, many upscale Americans, particularly those who live in major cities and travel abroad and worry about whether they are tourists or travelers, will grow downright cynical or hostile when confronted with a suburban place like Haddonfield. Over the years, we've heard every inevitable snide comparison to places like Mayberry, Stepford, and that town where Jim Carrey lived in The Truman Show. When we moved here, an acquaintance from Manhattan came to visit. After several days and countless eye rolls, she cracked, "I cannot believe you live here. It's like a fake town. It's so authentic, it's like inauthentic." She insisted we move immediately. I should mention that at the time, this woman was at work on a lip-smacking Under the Tuscan Sun ripoff about a year she spent living in a small town in a popular region of a Mediterranean country, one with lots of lemon trees and vineyards and salt-of-the-earth peasants who deeply understood life's simple pleasures. In contrast, last summer we hosted some foreign friends who stopped on their way from New York toward Point South. These friends live in a city that is usually dubbed one of the hottest in Europe, a place where history is centuries older and design is cutting edge and supermodels supposedly roam the clubs. It's fascinating, then, that when these stylish Europeans visited, they simply loved small-town Haddonfield. They wandered the main street and hobnobbed with locals. They bought knickknacks. They hung out in the local coffee shop and ate Italian water ice and cheesesteaks. They brown-bagged wine into restaurants. Philadelphia, recently declared the next great American city by one major travel magazine, conveniently lies 15 minutes to the west by train, but my friends took little advantage of this. I tried to present them with my Insider's Philadelphia tour, but after a few hours they said, "Let's just go back and hang out in Haddonfield." At first I thought I just had strange friends, but after a few days I clearly understood what was going on. "This is America just like we imagine it," they said. To them, like it or not, Haddonfield was exactly the vision of the United States they were searching for, which isn't actually that strange when you think about the way a hill town in Tuscany, or a fishing village in Norway, or a settlement in the South American jungle appears to the American traveler on an endless quest for the authentic. In Alain de Botton's essay on Zurich, included within these pages, he writes, "We normally associate exotic with camels and pyramids, but perhaps anything different and desirable deserves the word." All of which means, of course, that there cannot possibly be a single authentic travel experience to be found in any place. Great travel writers know this, and this is why excellent, noteworthy travel writing is always done in the first person. The misperception is that the travel book is about a country, Paul Theroux once said. It's really about the person who's traveling. And now, from the August 2018 edition of Money Magazine, under their retirement section, here's a brief article that's somewhat related. "A simple move will save this couple thousands. Relocating to a lower tax and lower cost state can make a lot of sense for retirees." This is by Sarah Max. Clark Hurst discovered Clear Creek Tahoe, a golf community near Lake Tahoe, a few years ago when a friend invited him and his wife Ellen to play the course for a day. The Southern California parlayed that visit into a temporary membership at the new Nevada Golf Community, and then early last year he and his wife bought a lot where they eventually planned to build a home just across the street from the course. "Because of the elevation and the backdrop, the ball gets a lot of hang time," says Hurst, 58. "It's really dramatic." The same could be said for the potential tax savings the couple can enjoy by relocating to Nevada after they retire. For Hurst, the allure of retiring to this golf community goes beyond its stunning 18-hole golf course, easy access to skiing and hiking, or its more than 850 acres of permanently protected open space. While retirement is still a ways off for the couple, Hurst figures that moving from a high-tax state, California, to a no-tax state, Nevada, could save them tens of thousands a year just in taxes. He should know. He's a certified public accountant. The case for moving to a low-tax state. Sometimes the road to retirement means following the road less traveled, even if that takes you across state lines. The idea of moving from California, where the top state income tax rate is 13.3%, to Nevada, where there is no state income tax, was appealing even before the passage of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act late last year. That legislation is best known for having slashed personal income tax rates and boosted the standard deduction to $24,000 for married couples filing jointly. But thanks to the law, taxpayers now can deduct no more than $10,000 of their combined state and local income taxes, property taxes, and sales taxes. That means there's even more incentive for residents of high-tax states to think about crossing state lines in retirement. To understand how the math works, consider this extreme example of a retiree with just under $1 million in retirement income. Staying in California would cost this person more than $108,000 a year in state income taxes, based on the 12.3% rate. The additional 1 percentage point to get to 13.3% kicks in after $1 million. Under the old tax rules, that same person could deduct the full amount of state income taxes paid on his or her federal returns, reducing the total tax burden by about $50,000. Under the new rules, most of that break goes away. Most taxpayers are only beginning to grapple with how the new tax laws will ultimately impact them, both on the positive and on the negative side, says Paul Jacobs, a certified financial planner and enrolled agent with Palisades Hudson Financial Group in Atlanta. Other factors to consider in addition to taxes. While the new tax law might offer an additional nudge for retirees or soon-to-be retirees thinking about relocating, it's only part of the equation. Another aspect, obviously, is the overall cost of living in each location. Everything from housing costs to health care to entertainment to travel expenses for visiting friends and family. There can be several good financial reasons for leaving a high-tax state, but we view it as a last resort for reducing taxes, says Jacobs. Seven states don't levy individual income taxes: Alaska, Florida, Nevada, South Dakota, Texas, Washington, and Wyoming. In addition, Tennessee taxes only interest and investment income, but it's in the process of phasing that out. And New Hampshire limits personal income tax to interest and dividend income. Perhaps not by coincidence, six of these states, Florida, Nevada, South Dakota, Texas, Washington, and Tennessee, routinely show up in lists of the most popular states for retirees who are thinking of relocating, according to recent surveys. In some cases, the out-of-state move needn't be drastic. For example, a retired couple living in Portland, Oregon, where the top tax rate is 9.9%, could save thousands of dollars a year by relocating to Washington on the other side of the Columbia River. Minnesotans can escape high single-digit rates by heading west to South Dakota. And Georgians can pocket savings by moving south to Florida. Pay close attention to each state's rules. Retirees should pay attention to how each state taxes various sources of retirement income. Roughly a dozen states have income taxes but offer a break on retirement income, including from pensions, Social Security, and IRA distributions. Meanwhile, you'll want to make sure you abide by individual state tax rules related to cutting ties and establishing new ones. Some states are pretty aggressive when it comes to people claiming they are no longer a resident but still spending a lot of time in that state, says Jacobs, noting that every state has its own guidelines related to domicile. Besides the usual red flags, such as whether you change your driver's license, states may look at how much time you spend there and where you keep your most valuable or sentimental possessions. If you're spending a lot of time in your old stomping ground, says Jacobs, track your time. Yes, relocating could offer some tax savings, but at the end of the day, the move should make sense for you personally. You didn't spend your working life saving only to spend your golden years in a place that doesn't appeal to you. That's not a concern for the Hearsts, who know the Tahoe area well. The main reason to buy the property was the golf and the lifestyle, Clark says. But, he says, if we can save on taxes down the road, that's icing on the cake. Finally, for travelers, Money Magazine offers the 10 best national parks for your money. We crunch the numbers on America's most beautiful vacation spots to find which ones deliver the best value. From swampy marshes to soaring canyons, from glaciers to deserts, America's national parks encompass nearly every possible ecosystem. The 60 official national parks form a vast system that collectively spans 84 million acres and was visited more than 331 million times last year alone. But with so many options, it can be difficult to pick just one to visit. To help with that, Money teamed up with Kayak to figure out how much it would cost to visit each of the parks this summer. From there, Money also reviewed what each park had to offer and ranked them based on which were primed to deliver the highest value for your dollar. Each of the top parks are packed with must-do experiences and amenities, but at prices that, relatively speaking, make them a steal. And here are their picks and the cost for two to spend a week at each. Number one is Rocky Mountain State Park in Colorado at $2,336. Next is Great Smoky Mountains in Tennessee and North Carolina at $2,297. Three is Zion in Utah, also $2,297. Next is Death Valley in California and Nevada at $2,193. Next is Yosemite in California at $2,870. Six is Crater Lake in Oregon, $2,243. Seven is Hot Springs in Arkansas, $2,211. Eight is Saguaro in Arizona at $2,527. Nine is Great Basin in Nevada at $1,715. And number 10 is Voyagers in Minnesota at $1,999. And they say our rankings give the most weight to overall cost. We used round-trip airfare, lodging, and car rental data from Kayak and meal prices from Numbeo. We also factored in what each park has to offer visitors, weighing scenery ratings from GoOutsideBook.com and the number of things to do at each park from TripAdvisor. Now, I'm not sure we've got time to start another article. We're getting close to the end of our time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. So I think we'll just wrap it up here, but I hope that you will come back and listen to us again next time and that you've enjoyed today's session. My name is Florence Nash, and I'm reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and I remind you that today's programming is generously underwritten by Saliba Chiropractic. Saliba Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues, and you should call them at 919-782-4733. Again, that's 919-782-4733. I also remind you that the content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, we would love to hear from you. Please call us at 919-832-5138.